When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
This is Amber Rose Washington, music producer and author of the best-selling book, Hiding From Myself. And you're listening to the Ghosts in the Valley podcast.
Welcome to Ghost in the Valley podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley, and today I have a special guest. Her name is Jenny Colucci. She is a New Jersey-based paranormal investigator and team historian with a parasite experience. She is from Rochester, New York, and began investigating the paranormal while attending Rutgers University in Brunswick, New Jersey. Before joining Parasite, she investigated both in the United States and in Europe at such varied locations as the Sherlock Holmes Museum in London, the Biltmore Hotel in Coral Gables, Florida, and White Hill Mansion in Fieldsboro, New Jersey. The Parasite team has investigated numerous locations within New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania. The team features investigators with varied backgrounds, such as law enforcement, science, education, and psychology. Jenny and the Parasite team are also called to do private investigations. Parasite Investigations uses a team approach they like to call science and sensitivity. This method combines the work of sensitives and mediums with evidence-based science. Jenny is one of the hosts of the Parasite podcast. She appeared recently in the documentary film by Brian Fedominski, The Ghost of Somerville, the Old Dutch Parsonage. And I'll be right back with my conversation with Jenny Colucci right after these brief messages.
This is Beth Darlington, paranormal investigator and owner of Access Paranormal, and you're listening to the Ghost in the Valley podcast.
Okay, today I have Jenny Colucci. She is a New Jersey-based paranormal investigator and team historian with the Parasite experience. She is also the co-host of the Parasite podcast. Welcome to the show, Jenny.
Thank you so much for having me.
I mean, that is a quite impressive bio you sent me. So there are a few things in there I want to really pick your brain on.
Sure.
But before we get into all that, I mean, I know you've been asked this question a thousand times. What led you into the paranormal?
I actually love this question. And just today I was speaking to some of my co-investigators and I realized I don't think I have even told them this story. So this is going to be a premiere of this story on your show. When I was about 7 years old, as young girls do, we had a sleepover with some friends. And of course, we found the Ouija board, the requisite Ouija board everyone had back in the day. In a closet and decided, oh, we're going to have a seance. So about four of my friends and I went up into a dusty attic closet and we brought out the Ouija board. And of course, we wanted to talk to her dog or something like that. Nothing, you know, not George. It was either George Washington or her dog. Those were the choices. And we decided to do the dog. And suddenly I started having a sneezing fit. And one of the girls said, oh, Jenny's allergic to dogs. The dog must be here. And that was the beginning of my debunking career because I am definitely the team skeptic, the team debunker. And so that was my first case of debunking. I said to them, you don't think it could be the dusty attic that we're in, the dusty closet that we're in? I think that's a little bit more likely. So that was my very first attempt, you know, at contacting a spirit. but quickly it was debunked.
You know, mine was growing up in a haunted house as a child from like say 12 years old.
Oh, wow.
to 16. So I'm currently writing my book, which should be out next year. That's based on the true ghost story from the house. It's only taken me like 55 years to write this book, but yeah, well, I always like to hear like that those answers to that question, you know, because to have a paranormal team and to go out and investigate these sites, usually everybody on that team has a different story on what brought them into the paranormal. I was looking at your team. I like the fact that you're quite diversified in your backgrounds. How many are on your team?
We have a core group of about five or six, and then we have maybe 13 who come on investigations when needed.
I see you had like law enforcement, science, mm-hmm. education, psychology.
Yes.
Any mediums or psychics?
We do have two sensitives on our team. Yeah, mm-hmm. that we rely on. Definitely. Like I said, I am definitely the skeptic of the team. I am the scientist, very science focused. And I think that we really complement each other very well that way.
Yeah, you know, I listened to your episodes today. I was on the road traveling. I found your podcast. I listened to, I think, episode 3 and 4. Mm-hmm. All of three, most of four. I found that out that you were the skeptic one on the team. I suppose this will be interesting tonight. Yeah.
Right. Especially, you know, you lived in a haunted house. So I think I differ from a lot of people in this field in that I never did have an experience as a child. In fact, I was the one that, you may have heard this, that I was the one that people said, there's a monster under my bed. And I would say, no, there isn't. And rip the covers off, you know, kind of thing. I was always the one to say, don't be scared. There's nothing there.
Well, you know, after doing this for so many years, I also found out, you know, that most of your sites, you know, especially your local sites you go to, that those are the ones that really fascinate us. The ones you go on Blueberry Street, you know, somewhere in the back streets of Tennessee. You know, like I went on one just a couple months ago. I didn't take any equipment with me, just me and my cell phone. And I was under the impression I was going to go there and just do the interview of the man who had the haunted house. But I actually got to walk through the house, and it was really quite an experience. So I don't dog the equipment that your team or any other team uses. I personally like to go in. If I'm pushed from behind, I find that more believable than if I got it off of one of my meters. But in other words, I can go in there with a spirit box, you know, and you can get, if you know who you're targeting, and if that spirit wants to connect with you, because you probably found out on some of your investigations, they don't connect all the time, you know, or they pick who they want to connect with, or mm-hmm. the certain device you're using, you know.
That's true. That's true. Definitely. When it comes to equipment, we try not to call it evidence that we find on equipment. We try to call it an observation. So, for example, you were talking about, an EMF meter, let's say. Mm. So we would say, well, there's an abnormal level of EMF. It's not evidence of a spirit. It's an abnormal level of EMF.
Which is basically it's a bunch of energy. Right. So if you need that energy, that's why I felt in this house I was in a couple months ago, there was so much energy. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
And you know, I have a list of these, and you mentioned that on one of the shows about the equipment from old to new. You know, sometimes old can be better, like your Polaroid camera. I mean, sometimes what you're capturing in that photo, maybe it's in the mirror in the background, or your cell phone, like my cell phone. I took it into this house. My screen cracked in exactly four places.
Oh, wow.
And I think it's from that pressure that was from the energy. I'm not really sure, but he felt it. I felt it. I've seen the shadow people. He's seen the shadow people. It was very, very active, and I didn't have equipment. I wish I would have took something or have one of my friends at the paranormal team go with me. I think that's what he wanted. I think he wanted another paranormal team to prove to him on certain answers he was looking for. But I tried to tell him, you know, sometimes you can't get all the answers you're looking for. You can get certain answers, you know, like, you know, I think what happened was there was a paranormal team that went before I got there. And the psychic actually was communicating with the one child. And the first question she asked was, you're not going to make me leave, are you? I don't know if there's been people in there wanting to do like, and he doesn't want them to leave. So this house was there since, you know, the late 1700s, you know. So my thinking was, after getting the whole history of his story, was it was built on the Indian burial ground. But getting back to your stories and your equipment, I've seen that, you know, you go from K2 meters, dowsing rods to the laser grid.
We do. But, you know, you make a great point. I mean, honestly, sitting in a room and having the hair stand up on your arms, I mean, that's your equipment yourself.
Right. The reason I say that, because I did a documentary myself like 20 years ago, and I was on a bridge in Pennsylvania, and it's a very active bridge. And I hired a team of actors. I hired my sound crew, my lighting crew. I really went into this thing. I got nothing. I got nothing at all on this bridge. And right. So my crew, they all go up the hill. I said, you know what? I'm going to go down the gully under the bridge. I just want to get some more shots of the bridge itself. It was that time I was alone and no equipment was on. I had equipment there, but nothing was on. And that's when I was violently pushed from the back. I mean, like somebody took their fist and just hit you in the back with it.
That's incredible.
And you're telling yourself, you know, like you're a skeptic, you know, I'm telling myself, you know, it could have been muscle spasm. It could be, and then you're pushed again. And then somebody's like just real hard flicks your ear from behind. And then you hear like a growling noise, you know, then there's nothing there. So when I got to the top of the bridge, the actress I had play that part of the ghost under the bridge, she knew the area. So she was petrified. You know?
So, right.
So, you know, sometimes, and like I said, I used that equipment before, and I love your one member on your team. Is it Anthony that made the box? EMPT, or the empty box, he called it. Mm-hmm. Right. I love that because, you know, back at that time, 20 some years ago, a friend of mine made his own box up that we were using. And it was actually a K2 meter combined with an EVP or a spirit box, you know, and it was all together. So I don't know how he did it, and it worked fantastic, but it only worked when it wanted to work. You know, sometimes you don't get, like I always say, you know, paranormal investigation is like fishing. You know, you either get a lot of fish or you get nothing.
That's a great analogy. I really like that analogy. I really do. Or you move down beach a little bit.
Right.
You know, kind of thing.
Or sometimes the spirit just, they just connect with who they want to connect with from your team.
Exactly. We had that happen this last weekend. I had a gentleman asking questions and he wasn't getting anything. And he just said, why don't you try? Which I think is so great, you know, because really we're all there as a team together. It doesn't matter which one of us gets it. So sure enough, I asked and there was an answer. So maybe it's because I'm a woman. Maybe they know me because I've been there before. Who knows?
So being a skeptic, you want to prove.
You know, I have a word I love. It's pre-bunking. So the first thing I'll do is go into a place and say, what's going to look paranormal that is not paranormal? For example, the windows are going to be shaking because it's windy outside or something like that. The REM pod's going to go off because the floor shakes, that kind of thing. And that's, we do some pre-bunking. And then after that, yes, I think I'm your best friend as a skeptic, I always say, if you're trying to prove a haunting, because if I can't prove that it isn't, your case is a lot stronger.
I like to go in open-minded. That's why I love these private investigations on these homes. And nine times out of 10, it's not a paranormal activity. It is a tree hitting a house or a pipe in the basement. Or sometimes there was a banging in the other room, but there's nothing there. Found out the little banging they were hearing was the cat going in and out the back door. of the cat door, you know.
That's funny. That's like a horror movie, Al. The cat. It was the cat.
It was the cat, right. Well, I was looking at your bio. I love that you know, because you've been the different investigating in the United States and in Europe.
Yes.
And I want to hear the one about Sherlock Holmes Museum in London.
Oh, speaking of getting pushed, that actually happened to me on the staircase at the Sherlock Holmes Museum in London. That was probably the only time I've been touched. And sure enough, you know, I had a backpack on and I felt as if it fell down off my arm. So I went to pick it up and it hadn't fallen. So something definitely had rubbed my arm pretty good. And just in the middle of an open staircase. So that stayed with me for a while, definitely. And you know, museums are hard because they're objects, right? Brought in from all over the place. So who knows what energy is from the objects, what energy is from the building. We investigated Strauss Mansion recently, same thing. It was an empty mansion. They brought almost all the furniture in from other places. So that's always a little layer, an extra layer, I think you need to take into account.
So the museum in Sherlock Holmes, would you say it was haunted?
I would at this point, yes.
I mean, because you were pushed.
Yeah, I was definitely touched on the arm. And also, I had very clear voices coming through, definitely, on the recorder that I just couldn't explain. For me, that's my thing. I love the voices. My digital recorder is probably my favorite piece of equipment. And actually hearing a disembodied voice, which I did hear there as well, is probably the creepiest thing that can happen to me.
So I stopped trying to explain to people about, you know, what's real and what's not real, because, you know, it's like anything else in life, unless you experience it yourself, mm-hmm. don't really take full, you know, ownership of, that's my opinion.
Right. No, it's true. It's true. I mean, you can trust your teammates. We have amazing trust between us. I mean, if Anthony or Frankie, who you saw on the podcast, say it happened in my mind. You know, there's that complete trust. And I think you have to have the trust when you're in the middle of the night in an abandoned building type of thing.
Yeah, I like the way your team plays off each other. You know, and Anthony.
Yeah.
What's the other one's name?
Frankie,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He's the psychologist, yeah, and therapist, and you know, which is great because some of it involves that kind of thing, even for the spirits therapy.
Right, because I seen on your bio, you said your team approaches, like, you know, science and sensitivity.
Yes.
Explain to me or to my listeners what that is.
So we are big fans of the original ghost hunter, Hans Holzer. We actually wear our team shirt, has a Holzer quote on it. We got permission from the family to use it, designed by Frankie. We really believe in combining that use of, like Hans Holzer did. He used the mediums, Ethel, he would bring her in, and then he would follow that up with actual research and investigation and combine those two things. So we will use our sensitives, but we will also use our equipment, our research, that type of thing. So we try to combine them.
So you combine the science plus the sensitives that you make out of through the
psychics.
Exactly. I love that. You know, that's part of being diversified with your team, you know.
And sensitivity has another meaning too, in that, you know, we do private investigations and these are people who are hurting or looking for answers or, you know, something like that. And it's important that we treat that with respect and sensitivity.
You get different points of view on, you know, can you move the spirit on? You think it can be moved on? Mm-hmm. You know, because there's so many different, and I hate to bring in religion and everything, anything, because, you know, the Catholics believe in purgatory and there's that time after your death that you're judged whether you're going to go to heaven or hell. Protestants, Baptists, you know, they believe as soon as you die, there is no thinking about it. I mean, you're going to heaven or you're going to hell. But, you know, if you're judged on your Christianity during your life to go to heaven, then there's a little bit of purgatory there. I don't know on the spirits if they haven't moved on or have they moved on. Some of them have come back to get a final answer. Never had that proper closure.
Right.
You know, that's another really touchy subject.
Sure. Well, and then the question also is it our job? Is it our job as paranormal investigators to move someone on? And I would say no. In my opinion,
I've only been involved in two demon cases and neither one of those I dealt with. I will not, because I'm not qualified.
Right.
I don't believe in going and doing. And I think you had mentioned on one of your episodes of if you're not sure what you're doing, don't do it.
Right.
You know, because it can be dangerous.
It's very true.
If you leave that portal open, like I think it, what was it? Was it the seance? If you leave that portal open, you're asking for trouble.
Right. My grandmother used to say, don't call up what you can't put down.
Exactly. I like that. Good advice. Yeah.
Yes, I agree. And I definitely live by it. Yeah, definitely.
My one question was, mm-hmm. I think you already answered part of it. It was, have you or any of your team been hurt during an investigation?
I have not seen that happen. No.
I mean, you've been pushed, but I don't think, or touched out. I don't think you've been hurt.
Touched and pushed me, but no, not hurt. No, definitely not. So fortunately, because it sounds like you have, and that doesn't sound like a fun thing.
I haven't really been hurt. I've been like you, I've been pushed hard from the back, more of a punch in the back, but I wouldn't say it was a bite or a cut or an abrasion.
A scratch, right.
It was none of that. I was pushed. I was really right. Violently pushed, but it wasn't nothing I couldn't handle. But
right.
I was curious because, you know, some investigation teams have been.
I think we have to be very careful with that in terms of assigning intention to a spirit. You know, I mean, I think they could just be trying to get your attention by pushing you or anything they can do to get your attention. And I think sometimes people go too far to say, oh, they're evil or they're mad. And I don't think we can assign emotion or intention to a spirit, even with voices. You hear this, you know, get out kind of voice, right? And it sounds awful, that, you know, generic get out. And you know what? We laugh, but we've all gotten that. I mean, I'm sure you have. Get out. But you have to be careful.
About a year ago, I believe, I had a guest from another paranormal podcast. He was on. He says, my house is haunted. So if you hear anything, it's my house. I says, okay. But I didn't hear anything, right? So when I'm editing the podcast back, there was a bunch of like, you know, in the background. Hmm. And I kind of zeroed in on that, and the audio, it was saying, hi, Cooley. That's my last name.
Right.
Coming from his side. So in the back, from his house. So I thought that was very strange.
But did you said you slowed it down, or did you just play it at regular speed?
I played at regular speed, but I brought the audio up as far as I can bring it and focused in that little section.
Right. Cleaned it up.
Once I cleaned it up, got in there, it was, hi, Cooley.
Wow.
You know, and I thought. So I texted him back because, you know, I got a welcome from one of your ghosts. I mean,
that's interesting. Yeah, definitely.
He wasn't surprised. So,
right.
So, you know, I come across so many different things, and that's fine because I'm sure that when things happen, it kind of turns your head around.
Sure. Exactly. You know, we experience poltergeist activity often with teenagers. In the house, you know, we have an angry teenager who's, you know, getting the lights on and off. And that I've seen in investigations.
Any investigations stand out more than another? I mean, that you can think of?
Oh, so many. That's such a hard question. Yeah,
that is a hard one.
It's a really hard question. I mean, I can say that some places that have a reputation, like the Hinsdale House in New York State, it definitely lives up to that reputation to the point where you walk in and the activity is immediate. Just immediately a voice and talking to you and out loud in your ear, equipment going crazy, figures on the SLS camera. We like to call that paranormal lasagna. We call it that because of layers. Like, we're looking for layers, right? Like if you have all these different things happening at once, it sort of, like you said, turns your head. Okay, something's going on here. So, you know, that you have houses like that where you expect the activity and you get it. Type of thing. But then there are some places where you don't necessarily expect it and it surprises you. It really, you know, takes you, like you said, like a bridge or something like that. And I think people think, oh, it has to be an old creepy haunted house. Mm-hmm. But really it could be a supermarket, you know, at night. You mentioned the land, right? An Indian burial ground, something like that. Mm-hmm. It really could be anywhere. And you know where it usually isn't? A cemetery. That's the only place I've never seen any activity. And I always think, would you hang around there? I don't know.
So I don't do too many on cemeteries. You mentioned the house with the Indian burial ground. You know, that house was moved up the hill to its current location.
Right.
So were the spirits at the original location? Because they moved the house up with a team of horses on logs in the early 1800s. That's where the records of that house start, but he's still trying to do some background checks on that. My thinking is, since he was plowing his garden, he's come up with all these Indian artifacts around that house, and he has witnessed like a image of a Indian running down the tree line of his property at night. So that's the reason I say that, you know, because I have so many stories on Indian burial grounds.
I've heard so many cases where there's a story that's just been told so many times, it's just thought of as true. Something like a young girl who hanged herself. And then we do research and we find that that never happened. It's just has a life of its own. You said, if you've seen it yourself, then you believe it, right?
Yeah.
You've heard it, you've seen it, you believe it.
I'll be right back with the rest of my conversation with Jenny Colucci right after these brief messages.
This is Betsy Kulikowski, author of the Veritas Codex series, and you're listening to Ghost in the Valley podcast.
When you were asking about investigations that stand out, it sounds so convenient to say, but honestly, the ones that stand out are my most recent ones at this theater that we have started investigating. And the reason is that I've never been to a location that hadn't been investigated before. So, you know, I feel like everywhere I go, except for private homes, that is, but everywhere you go nowadays that's, quote, haunted, people have been there. You know, they've done things and you have some background. But this is a place that hadn't been investigated and, you know, had claims of paranormal activity. And we were asked to come in and see what we thought. And of course, the first time, you know, you maybe get a hit on a REM pod. You might get, you know, you think you hear something, but not much kind of thing. But I've never had a location that I could go back to repeatedly and really build a case for it, you know, and start to get names and research those names. And it's been an amazing experience. And then last weekend on Saturday, we did something really amazing. We brought in all the experts that would come to work together on this theater. So we brought people who were experts in ITC, people who were psychic mediums. We brought them all together and said, what do you got? Go for it. Take a look at our wonderful theater and let's all work together here. Like that para-unity idea. Mm-hmm. And it went so well. So well.
Was that a private investigation?
This is a theater in New Jersey that it's an operating theater.
Oh, it's operating still today? Okay.
Yep, still today. It was built in the 1920s, started as a vaudeville movie house in the 1920s. And of course, with COVID, it was shut down for 15 months. And we had this idea that we would help out. I mean, it was really a philanthropic thing. We thought, let us, you know, bring in investigations, bring in teams, bring in the public and have them say, pay to investigate, you know, go see a show. And then after the show, investigate the theater all night and, you know, hopefully put some money back into the theater. They suffered so much really with the pandemic. So, you know, it began as a philanthropic thing, but became absolutely fascinating. It's most of the activity I experienced there, I have never experienced before. Things like slamming doors, opening doors, bottles falling over in front of your eyes, like a lot of that type of, you know, kinetic stuff.
Yeah, that was my next question, you matter of fact, was your recent investigations.
Right.
That's cool. You went right into it.
Oh, I love it. I mean, it's been so great for us, this theater. It really has, because how often do you get a chance to go back and go back again and check things and experience them at different times? You mentioned one night might be quiet. One night might be, you know, and that's happened to us. We've had nights where, like I said, the door is opening, you have smells, you have heat signatures in some of the seats, you have all this, you know, these observations. And then some nights, just quiet. But we're starting to piece together the history and who might be there. You know, we had an idea, but then when we brought the psychics in, you know, we had another level. You know, these are really reputable people. And, you know, they hit on things that we already knew and brought us to another level, really. So it's a team effort. And we just want to open it up to people, teams to come in and research it, investigate there.
That's so cool, because it really sounds like you love what you're doing and you're totally into it. And
It's a beautiful theater, Al, beautiful Greek Revival theater. I mean, it's really breathtaking.
On your podcast.
Sure.
How long have you been doing this?
This team is only 1 year old, exactly. On Halloween, we were 1 year old. So we've all investigated with other people in other places or alone, but we just came together a year ago, this team, Parasite.
I like the little sound clips you guys put in there.
You have to have fun. We laugh. I mean, we do. We laugh. We really get along well. We laugh. We bounce, like you said, we bounce off of each other really well. And it's great. I have to say that it was Anthony and Frankie who formed the team. And then it was me who begged to get on it when I met them. I was like, please take me, because they were such wonderful people and had the right idea about what they were doing. It wasn't for the fame. It wasn't for the shock value. It was really for the research and how do we advance this field? And let's think of some new things. I mean, I talked to them about string theory and quantum physics and all those new things that we're looking into with the paranormal field. And they say, go for it. Let's do some experiments. You know, they're great. They're great guys. Wonderful guys.
And when you get to use different equipment too, you know, especially Anthony? Mm-hmm. I just like the fact that he so into like trying new equipment, making the equipment, made him a box, you know, and the crystal inside the box.
No, the crystal is actually an antenna, just like the antenna is an antenna. So you can touch either one, really. And the whole idea behind that is it's like a jewel box or like a music box, and not so much like a REM pod, because you're going into an old house, let's say like a Chrysler Mansion, who I mentioned as one of my absolute favorite investigations. And, you know, you're having, let's say, the lady of the house, you know, a long time ago, is going to look at that and think, okay, that looks familiar to me. It's pretty, it's handcrafted, something like that, versus some type of, you know, round electronic thing that makes a lot of noises I don't recognize. So yeah, the crystal, we've had a lot of luck with that box, a lot. I think it's interesting to a spirit, really.
I do too, you know, but there's some spirits, you know, what really gets me and that floors me every time is when you come across a spirit and they don't know they're dead.
Oh.
I had the need writing this book and going through with my sister and my eighth grade teacher. I remember way back, I'm aging myself now, going back into the 1970. Mm-hmm. My eighth grade teacher, and everybody put like, she's out there because she was seeing invisible people. She had little green men or gray men sitting in your seat in class. So when I would go into school one day, she says, you can't sit here because so-and-so is sitting there. You know, he's the grays, you know? And I thought, okay, you know, I had moved across the, but you know, what she told me back then and what I'm finding out now is the same thing, you know, and so maybe label her crazy or what. So, you know, things can revert to 2020. Mm-hmm. And that's why I was getting to that equipment that you guys were talking about on the podcast today, was sometimes you may rely on that Polaroid or that infrared camera, but it is nice to have like that device he made, you know, the empty EMPT
box. Right.
So I love that. I really do. Cause you know, he's going forward, you know, he's trying new things and trying to maybe get in another angle of communicating with the spirits.
Exactly. And I mean, we love the old school as well. We have a team member who literally only uses a pendulum. He does not own any other equipment. Right. Well, you don't want to go through your toolbox.
If you're going to a Gettysburg home, you might want to dress up as that time period you know, something they can relate to. But I had other guests on told me, you know, you think with all this new equipment people's walking through these places with, they should know what, even now with the laser grids on the wall, they're probably learning as we're going, you know.
Maybe. Yeah. That's an interesting, that's assuming that consciousness is really a higher level.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if I totally go along with that, but
intelligent haunting for sure. In really the sense of the word.
Right. So I listen to everybody's point of view.
Of course, we should.
You know, because my first guest, my very first episode, when I had a live guest on.
Okay.
He was an atheist. You know, so that really set me back because I wasn't prepared. You know, so I wasn't looking at when I asked him, do you think you can move a spirit on? So his answer was definitely not. No way.
Because there's nowhere to move it to.
Right. Exactly. So where are you moving the spirit to?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're killing it.
Right.
You're killing the spirit. You're not moving it anywhere. And if we don't believe in heaven or hell,
Right.
Where are you moving the spirit to? And I didn't know how to answer that. I really didn't. I was just, because I'm just raised a certain way. And
Sure.
But then when you hear all these other points of views of even Native American Indian on, you know, mm-hmm. how the ground is so sacred, earth.
Right.
You know, and disrupting earth could be not good.
Right. Right. Or even that a tree or a river has its own energy.
Anything that's living has its own.
Exactly.
Spirit.
Exactly.
And, because I was a child, and I remember going into a Indian, it was a gift shop, and an old Indian was sitting on the front porch. I mean, a real Indian. And he was taking his coffee, but he was letting the coffee go back in the cup of a spoon, like 2 feet high. I asked him, he did it like three times. I was, what are you doing? I'm like 10 years old. The Indian says, I'm releasing the evil spirits from the coffee.
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, you know. So my dad, he comes on, he goes, oh, listen to his nonsense. Let's go. You know.
Right.
And so years later, 40 years later, I'm at work, and my coworker, I'm walking through the shop, and he's doing the same thing with his coffee, let it drip back down this cup.
Oh my goodness.
And I says, Bob, what are you doing? He said, I'm releasing the evil spirits from my coffee. wouldn't that blow you away? You know?
Wow.
I'm like, yeah. So then I had a story brought to me. It was one of my past episodes, an Indian Johnny. And in that story that was sent to me is the same story I just told you.
Wow.
You know, and it's so there's stuff like that that really blows me away.
Sure.
It comes like full circle. And so is it crazy what he was doing with the, so you know what I do now every time I make coffee and I let the coffee drip.
I love it. Just in case.
Just in case. Right.
You're like, well, and just in case he's right, I better do it. I love it. No, I mean, I grew up in New York State. So I mean, definitely, you know, so much Native American history there. Lots of towns you can't pronounce.
Oh, yeah. Same as New Jersey. I see Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm, very much so. But you always have to take that into account. I mean, absolutely.
So as far as you're investigating, you go out as far as what? New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania?
Most are in New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. We have an investigation in New York State this weekend at the Mid-Orange Reformatory in Warwick. Have you been there?
No, I have not.
We go to the big ones. You know, Pennhurst.
Like asylums.
Yep.
They open up for tours, like even Ohio. Mansfield Reformatory.
Mm-hmm.
And matter of fact, we're going there in a couple of weeks. There's one in Pennsylvania, Hillview Manor. It's very mm-hmm. active.
I know Hillview. Yes.
And mm-hmm. And there's, like I said, the Hogback Bridge. That's always very, I've been there two or three times.
Pennsylvania is full of
it's
amazing
loaded.
Places.
Right.
Yeah, it really is.
I see you were recently appeared in a film documentary. Explain that.
I did. I live in a town called Somerville, New Jersey. It's a very small town, 2 miles square. You can walk everywhere. But it's an old town. It was in the late 1800s. It was really formed. And, you know, it's beautiful. The Victorian homes, you know, the very stately homes and old buildings are gorgeous and everything. And a local gentleman, Brian Badimsky, he's actually an actor as well. You may have seen him on TV on Discovery ID, I believe he's on sometimes. And he is also a filmmaker. And he decided, well, this is my hometown. I'm going to make a series about the ghost stories of Somerville. And it really was about ghost stories. And that was very foreign to me with my approach that you're getting an idea of. It's much more scientific, that type of thing, research. And these were really ghost stories. You know, ghost stories. And I thought, well, that's not for me. You know, I'm not, that's not my thing. But the second installment of the films was about something called the Old Dutch Parsonage. It's a beautiful old building in our town. And I thought, okay, I love that building. And what can I offer here? So I did, I approached him and I said, you know what? The story you're telling is very much a residual haunting story. I want to tell your viewers what that is, type of thing. And it just became a friendship between us. And I ended up really talking about what a residual haunting is, a historical haunting, and how that was affecting that building. And I think I hope it added something to it. It's been released. It's out. So you can check it out. He's a great storyteller.
Where do you get a hold of that at? Like on YouTube or?
Yeah. It's on Tubi as well. I wanted to be involved in my community, really, because I investigate everywhere else except where I live. So I thought, how can I help here? And it really kind of jived. There really was a historical type haunting going on there. To the point where it was so repetitive. It was like stopping at a certain step every day type of thing. The things that you think of as a residual haunting.
The Ghost of Somerville, the old Dutch parsonage, is that a series or is it like just one?
So The Ghost of Somerville is a series, and that's just the second in the series. The first one was a ghost story at a home in Somerville.
So you're in the second part?
Yeah, the second one.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. The first one was the ghost of Mrs. Mix. So, and the second one was the old Dutch parsonage. We have actually two buildings across from each other that are amazing historical buildings run by the New Jersey Park Service, the Wallace House. And believe it or not, we always say George Washington slept here, right? But George Washington actually did sleep there for 6 months with his wife. So 6 months, that was pretty significant. Uh-huh. And that's at the Wallace House across from the parsonage. Yeah, really amazing buildings in our community.
Anything special you have coming up?
Yes. Rest, Al, rest.
Well, you know, I was going to say that, you know, you're a paranormal investigator. You're going to all these sites. You're in the documentary. You have your own podcast.
Yes.
Does this girl ever rest?
Let me tell you, in May, we had about five investigations. And since starting, it just took off. This group just took off. And it's time. I think we're going to finish up this weekend with the Mid-Orange Reformatory, and I think we're going to take a little bit of a break.
A well-deserved break. Yeah.
Yeah, well-deserved. Yeah, we've really just had so many wonderful investigations this year, and in every kind of weather. I mean, Chrysler Mansion, we had an ice storm. The windows were rattling. It was minus 29, you know, outside, and you know, it was unbelievable. But that's the adventure of it, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to put all your links at the bottom of this episode that you sent me so they can come on and check your podcast, check your paranormal team, anything else you got going on, your TikToks and your Instagram, everything you get sent, I'll put at the bottom of this episode. And I definitely want to have you back on next year. And we'll catch you back up on your new activities. I know you're going to be busy.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Year two. The Parasite Experience, year two. We're ready.
Awesome. Awesome.
After a rest.
After, you know, I'm taking me a rest too. And in December, I'll have another one and I'm done for the year.
Right. Right.
Get my body back into shape and kick it back out again next year, starting season five, you know.
That's amazing. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. That's my plan anyway, you know, and just keep plugging away, you know. And I applaud you for what you're doing and coming on the show and sharing your stories.
Thank you so much. It was a joy to meet you. Thank you.
I want to thank Jenny Colucci, who is a paranormal investigator and team historian with the Parasite Experience, also the co-host of the Parasite podcast, and also dipping her feet into acting in the series, The Ghost of Somerville, The Old Dutch Parsonage. Thank you, Jenny, and I will have all of her links at the bottom of this episode. This is Al Cooley from Ghost in the Valley podcast.